Welcome to Dream Business Radio, the place to create your dream business now. Get ready for some inspiration, some encouragement, some proven business building strategies, and a couple of new ideas
that you haven't even thought of.
It's time to leave Slow and Steady as She Goes to the other entrepreneurs, because this program is all about speed and fast results. And now, broadcasting from his floating home somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean, the dream business coach himself, Jim Palmer.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Captain Jim Palmer. I am the dream business coach. I have another fantastic interview for you. I'm going to introduce you to Christopher Wallace, and we're going to talk marketing and all things entrepreneurial. Chris Wallace is the co-founder and president of Interview, which is a marketing consulting firm that helps companies effectively transfer their brand strategy to their customer-facing employees and partners. Chris builds upon previous success as an entrepreneur in the sales consulting and coaching space, as well as his more than 15 years of sales, marketing, and corporate leadership. Chris's primary professional focus is to help companies better align the strategies of the boardroom with the daily execution at the front lines, which is very often a challenge for a lot of companies. So I'm excited to delve into that. Beyond his work with clients, Chris is able to apply his passions as a teacher and author. He has taught as an adjunct MBA professor at Temple's Fox School of Business, very, very good school for business. And he's also been published in outlets such as Harvard Business Review and Chief Marketer, and is contributor to publications including Inc.com and Forbes.com. Chris, I just found out, is in Philadelphia. I call it my old stomping grounds, even though we're in the suburbs. We're both Eagles fans, I would assume, although I didn't ask that. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Good. Are you an Eagles fan, or did you relocate from the other side of the state?
I know. I think you were a little bit presumptuous with your first topic there. Not necessarily a big Eagles fan, but we can save that topic for another day.
I know. Somehow my voice gets ahead of my brain sometimes, but okay, not an Eagles fan. Well, thanks for coming on the program. I love talking to marketers and things like that. I'm always curious. So I know you had a corporate background. So how long before you kind of went out on your own? Were you like a 1040 employee before you became an entrepreneur and ran your own place?
Good question. So I actually started out on my own. I would consider fairly young. I was 31 years old, and I was actually going to be in a situation where through a corporate merger, a corporate acquisition, I was going to have to relocate my family. And it just wasn't the right timing for my family to relocate. It would have been to the Metro New York area. And as a result, an opportunity sort of popped up for me to go start doing gig work. And I took that opportunity and really haven't looked back since.
Wow, that's awesome. And I know you live in Villanova, so right there in the main line. So tell me a little bit about doing a little quick research before we jumped on. Brand dilution. What do you mean there?
Really what we find is we work with a lot of larger consumer brands. And what we find is these organizations are spending a lot of money to market their message and their story to their customers through traditional and frankly, modern and non-traditional marketing channels. And they're spending so much money to get that message out there. But the question that we sort of pose is, what happens when that customer hears that marketing message and then calls into your call center or walks into your retail store or talks to one of your salespeople face to face? Are they hearing the same message? And when we ask a marketer or a brand manager that question, they usually laugh because their confidence that that message is getting through down at the front lines isn't very high. And that's the dilution that we talk about. The dilution is from the marketing strategy and the brand story that's being delivered directly to the customers and the one that they hear when they show up to talk to the company. That disconnect seems to be very real, and marketers are really more than willing to acknowledge that that's a problem in their organization.
And I also in your bio, we talked about how you help companies, take the strategy from the boardroom and have it execute on the daily process on the front lines. That's got to be the hardest thing, I would think, for companies these days. I don't know if you deal with a lot of retailers and when I think of the front lines, I think that's their Achilles heel right now.
Really any customer facing channel. I mean, it can even be things like technicians and other channels that are directly interfacing with the customer. The trend that we've seen in the last several years is really customer experience is king. And organizations are really trying to figure out what customer experience means for their organization. And we look at, you know, you talk about that connection between the strategy of the boardroom and then the execution at the front lines. And the sliver of that that we're focused on is the brand. And I say sliver, but brand is really a big part of that process for big consumer organizations. And they invest a lot in their brand, and their brand has to mean something. Most products in the consumer space are commodities, and really trying to differentiate yourself through something other than just your product, and in this case, really being the experience, you need to make sure that who you're telling the customer you are through the marketing and through the advertising is actually who you are when they show up. And that's across a lot of different product categories.
And that is the biggest challenge I find is, you know, I spent probably 30 years in retail. And I find that, you know, when all the best marketing in the world, whether it's going to get somebody in the door or to have a phone call with you or something like that, it's if you have like about a second or two when they open the door to say, okay, this feels like the right place, or somebody answers the phone inappropriately. Do you do a lot of that work? I'm curious about, you know, the main driver of how you work with companies.
Yeah, so I think that's a great example. I'll give you a little anecdote. A friend of mine, actually for fun, believe it or not, he's an executive level person, but for fun, I got a job at a major electronics retailer just on the side, nights and weekends. He's an electronics, he's into electronics, he's an electronics buff, and he wanted to just learn about their processes and things like that. And he worked in their home theater section. And he told me that he could switch a person from the brand that they came in to look at to another brand 9 out of 10 times. So when you think about the work that we do, we're working with organizations to make sure that that connection between the brand and the person who's ultimately standing in front of the customer is a lot stronger than that. We want to make sure that when that customer walks in, that if they're bringing up a brand, the person that's helping them is going to talk about, the sales associate is going to talk about, that they do it with passion and they do it with conviction and they really do believe in the brand that they're talking about, regardless of what brand that is. And we find that's a real risk for organizations is if, especially if they work through retail channels or partners and things like that, where somebody walks in and it's very easy for the marketing that's being driven through one of the companies, use a Samsung, for example. Samsung's advertising is driving the person into the store, but they're getting switched to LG time and time and time again. That's a challenge for Samsung. So we work with the brands to really make sure that the passion for the brand, the understanding of the brand is there, not just knowledge about the products, because we find that knowledge of the products isn't enough to really drive that brand affinity with the frontline associates.
That's so interesting. You know, the LG, Samsung and all. I think LG does such a great job with their marketing. And then you go in the store, it's like, oh, I'd like to look at the LG. I'm not saying it's bad or I know people who like it, hate it ever. So, I mean, that is really a good example of how good the marketing is when they go in kind of pre-sold. You know what I mean? So when you work, when interview works with your clients, how often, I'm curious, Chris, do you feel you have to like change their brand or does it just need maybe a little fine tuning or, you know, do you ever have people come to you and you can see right away their brand is like totally not working?
The answer is yes, we see that. But the reality is that's not the work we do. Right. And we are a niche provider, but we are very focused on we're trying to reach a different audience. The brand team is trying to reach the external audience. They're trying to build an with the customer base. We are trying to build an affinity for that brand with the people who represent it. And that might seem like a nuanced message, but we really do think it's important. The way you communicate and the way that you engage people internally is different than the way you engage externally. And what we find is a lot of times organizations have a big initiative that they're pushing out and their branding or marketing agency will only take that initiative so far. They're so focused on getting the campaign built, the media bought so they can do the advertising that the internal piece becomes the afterthought. But you mentioned it earlier, if you're driving customers into a store and you're driving demand, but that demand is not converting into a sale and they are experiencing something different than they were promised through the advertising, they're going to walk out and they're going to go to a competitor. So we really look to partner with the traditional branding and marketing agencies to help pull through their external strategy through the internal channels and keep those two things connected. So we don't do the brand work. We joke we're like 3M. We don't build your brand. We take the brand that you have or the message that you have, and we make sure that it's executed internally. We make that overall equation better and more valuable.
Got it. You know, it's interesting, the stereo store, when, my oldest son is 37, but I think he was around 6 or 7, our VCR died so many, many years ago. And I took all four of our kids in the car down to Wilmington, Delaware, where right across the 202 border, as you know, where there's yep. no tax in Delaware. And there was like 3 or 4 different places back in the day where I could look for a VCR. And here I am with 4 little kids, and I go in this one store. And I walked in the door. I just stood there waiting and waiting and waiting. And then I kind of just walked up to the guy behind the counter. And there's another person over at the stereo wall. But all I was going to do is, where are the VCRs so I can start looking? So I said, excuse me. And he goes, I'm sorry, sir. I'm already with somebody. I can only wait on one customer at a time. That was his response. I said, okay, I'll make it easy for you. And we walked out and went to the other store. But anyway.
That's a pre-customer experience environment right there. That's a, you know, this is the only place you can get it. You know, wait in line. That's not the mentality that we help drive with our customers.
And my kids were like, wait, why are we going? I said, it's because we're going to vote with our feet and cross the street. They never forgot that. One of those dad lines. What is internal marketing, Chris?
So we really look at it. I mentioned it earlier. We don't build the brand, but we make sure the people who represent it believe in it and have passion for it. And we look at it as it's the difference between driving knowledge and driving belief. And most organizations are set up to think about it in terms of a customer. If you want a customer to take action, if you want to drive action and drive behavior from your consumer, you don't do it by trying to train them. You don't train the customer how great you are and give them all the product details and bury them under a sea of information and expect them to be moved by it. You approach it in a much different way. You approach it in a much more experiential or a much more emotional type way. Think about car ads and the way that car ads try to catch us emotionally. Well, we look at it and say, if you have a population of people, if you have a segment of your population, in this case being your employees and your frontline representatives, if the only methodology that you're using to try to help them represent your brand is just to give them a lot of product information, we don't believe that's going to drive the belief, the passion, or the experience that you ultimately want your customers to have. So we look to layer on top of all of the training that's done and really supplement that. We work with training departments. We're not a replacement for training, but we work with them to really bring that experiential aspect and that emotional aspect. So the people who are on the phones or the people who stand in the retail store actually believe that the stuff that they're representing has value for the customers. At the end of the day, this is all about delivering a value proposition in a consistent way, in a compelling way. We want to put them in a position to do that, but we don't think information alone is the way that you do that. We want to really drive that emotional attachment, that emotional bond to the brand. And to be honest with you, you talk to marketers about this, and they know they need this. They know they need their people to have that emotional connection. They just struggle with the how. But internal marketing is really that supplement to what they're already doing with training and internal communications to take them from a point of knowledge of what the products are to true belief that they offer value.
Got it. I saw, I was looking at your website, which is a pretty good website. And as far as it's nice flow of information, by the way. And there's something on there called the invisible tax. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So we, a lot of marketing organizations are really trying to drive greater accountability with how they're spending their money. And it's not just about likes or shares or some of the social media metrics that have become so popular in the last decade or so. It's really about tangible results. If you put advertising out there, if you spent money on media, did it drive impressions? Then did those impressions drive action? Did that action turn into sales? And when we look at the disconnect, the dilution we talked about earlier, when we look at the disconnect between what is being told to the customer via the marketing and what they're hearing when they show up to buy, if you are not connected there, if you are not aligned, you are going to lose sales. You're going to lose money because your brand and your value proposition are not going to come through as strongly as they need to. We recently did a study with a market research and customer insights company called Focus Vision, a well-known platform. And we worked with Focus Vision to ask executives whether or not they thought this was a problem, this idea of the dilution and kind of what that invisible tax was to their business. And what they told us was, not only do they believe that it's a problem, two-thirds of them told us that they believe it's a problem, 66%, but 62% of those people told us that they value the consistent brand message at $10 million or more annually. Now, these were big companies. These weren't small, medium-sized businesses. These were enterprise-type clients, enterprise-type companies. But what they told us was, if our message is breaking down, we believe that's going to cost us more than $10 million annually in revenue. That's the invisible tax. The invisible tax is we're trying to measure how well our marketing's doing. We're trying to measure how well we're driving demand, but failing to look at whether or not we're converting and what some of the barriers are to that conversion, that's where the money's leaking through the cracks.
Why do you think companies struggle so much? I mean, to tell a consistent story. I mean, I know companies are different, but they all seem to be struggling in this area, which is probably why your business is doing so well, I would think.
I think it's a couple things. I'm going to say that you can say that there's issues like size and scale and you know, the size of the organization, the number of employees, that's driving that. But all the companies we're talking to have that same problem. So sort of take that, it's table stakes. Everybody has to deal with that. I think I'm going to call out two things. The first is the speed of introduction of new things, more stuff. One of the things we found in our study is that organizations are launching new products and services. About half the companies were launching them on a quarterly basis. So think about that. Just as a frontline salesperson or customer service rep or retail associate is getting comfortable with your product set, they don't even have 90 days to get comfortable before they're getting something new. So the rate of introduction, the speed of the go-to-market cycle is increasing. It's accelerating. And organizations are looking for ways to grow. They're looking for new revenue streams. So they're introducing new products and services. And that's creating strain on the front lines. That's causing them to have to adapt more quickly. And that leads me in kind of the second bucket, which is with that rate of you know, go-to-market, that go-to-market cycle speeding up, organizations are still doing all the same things that they've done for years to try to equip their front lines. They do product training. They send emails out. They do internal communications. Those types of things, again, those are table stakes. It's what are organizations going to do to supplement, to complement the traditional means of communicating with their people and really help them keep up, help them be more adaptable. And what we're finding is product training and email are not exactly the most they're not driving the most flexibility and adaptability in organizations. That's become noise to people at the front lines. So I really think it's the speed combined with some stale tactics that organizations are relying on that's driving that disconnect. Their own internal mechanisms are not keeping up with what the marketing team is putting into the marketplace.
Do you think it's a problem that companies either spend more time focusing their message aimed at their customers or their employees, or are they not doing a good job at both? And I guess, do they even recognize that they are two different audiences?
I would say that I don't think the average consumer would tell you that there's a shortage of consumer marketing or marketing messages being thrown at them. So I don't know that it's that they're not doing a good enough job with their customers. I think in a lot of cases they're doing a good job with their customers. I think that the let's go back to what I said earlier about sort of this age of customer experience. The majority, it's getting to the point where the majority of the purchasing decision is being made based on what that experience feels like, how they're treated, how consistent it is. You think of the Chick-fil-A's of the world, something as simple as the person saying "my pleasure" at the end of your interaction. That's what's bringing people back. Not necessarily that the chicken's better, because you can get good chicken across the street someplace else. It really is that consistency of the experience. So I don't think that it's that organizations aren't doing enough to get their message out to the customers. I just don't think that they're doing enough to back it up and investing in their frontline people enough to make sure that that promise is backed up.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's been my pleasure to serve you. I think that's stunning in a day and age where customer service is really not great, to be kind, to receive that each and every time I go to a Chick-fil-A is stunning to me. So they're doing something right.
Jim, if I could just jump in with one thought on that. I think that one of the key phrases we use is, we don't call, you know, when we're talking to a client or a prospective client, we don't use the phrase customer facing or front lines. We say brand representatives. And when you're talking to a marketer, anybody who's standing in front of your customer is making a brand impression every time they interact with that customer, whether it's behind the counter at a retail store or a technician that goes in your home to either fix your HVAC or your leaky faucet. They're making an impression on your brand. They're leaving an impression with your customer about your brand. So to look at that person as operations or to look at them as anything other than a true extension of the marketing function, we think is a mistake. So a lot of this is really just reframing those audiences as part of the marketing army and not just, you know, part of your ops team or your delivery team. They have to look at that as an opportunity to build their brand with the customer every single time they have that interaction.
Good point. What role has social media played as it, I imagine, well, correct me, I want to know your thoughts, but I think it's both exacerbated the problem. So things, you know, travel so much faster in today's world, but it also, correctly done, gives a company an opportunity to put out their own, as you know, the brand, the message, and also correct something that might be wrong.
So social media is a great, kind of a great opportunity and great challenge for marketers. And what social media has done is create an environment where marketers can talk to their customers in a more dynamic way than they've ever been able to in the past. That direct link between brand and consumer is really there. What we're finding is the organizations aren't necessarily interacting with their own people in as dynamic of a fashion. It's funny to think that social tools are just starting to become something that organizations are using internally and getting their people talking to one another and sourcing ideas really organically from their frontline people. So social is an interesting challenge, but it has created that dynamic conversation. And if the marketers are having a dynamic conversation with the customer, it's a real risk if they're not equipping their own people to have that same dynamic conversation. It comes down to speed, right? The speed with which marketers are engaging the consumer is increasing, but they're not adapting internally to be as nimble as they need to be.
Got it. I think I got time for one more question, Chris. Marketing ROI, I mean, is that a struggle? I mean, it's always a struggle. Companies want to know, well, if I'm going to invest this money here, there, or any, what's the ROI? I think social media makes that a lot more difficult, but it seems like what you're doing has a lot of value, but how do you show the ROI to a potential customer?
Thank you for asking that, because that's a big part of how we talk about our service. So it's pretty simple. When you think about the average CMO, mainly in consumer-driven brands, the CMO is looking at cost to acquire as a major fundamental metric in their marketing plan, in their marketing program, CTA, as they call it. Driving down cost to acquire is sort of the holy grail in marketing. Being able to get a customer paying you, whether it's subscription or one time, whatever it is, being able to earn customers for a lower average price each time is a really important pursuit for the average CMO. And what we offer them there is taking the marketing that they're already doing, the marketing that they're already spending money on, and we're offering them a challenge of, look at your marketing and you can either drive more customers to your call centers or to your retail store or wherever you are selling your goods and services. You can drive more of them into that location or into that place, into that interaction, and you can figure out how much that's going to cost and how many you need to convert, or you can invest to convert more of the ones you're already getting. We jokingly sort of call that marketing insurance. And if you sort of back up the investments that you've made in driving demand with support at the conversion level, it becomes easy to measure the ROI. We have a client that is in the jewelry space, the luxury jewelry industry. And we were able to help them improve their conversion by 33%. And it's not a hocus pocus number. It's legitimately 33% higher close rate through the work that we do, just by helping them amplify their brand, helping their frontline teams, their call center folks really understand their brand and reflect that brand on every single phone interaction. We improved their conversion by 33%. So it becomes pretty simple to measure ROI when you're looking at things like conversion, attach rate. Those are revenue-driven metrics. We're not looking at likes. We're not looking at brand impressions. We're not even looking at things like employee satisfaction. In some cases, we'll look at customer satisfaction, but those are even hard things to quantify. We want to know if more customers bought as a result of the work that we did, yes or no, and that's typically easy to measure.
Great answer. Wow, very cool. Man, I've really enjoyed our conversation today, Chris. I'm sure our listeners have also. What's a good place for them to connect with you and learn more about your company interview group?
Well, you mentioned our website. I appreciate that. We're at interviewgroup.com. We're all over LinkedIn. You can find our company page on LinkedIn, Interview Group. And we do a lot, like you said in the beginning in the bio, do a lot of writing. So we're publishing blogs regularly. We're being published in external third-party outlets frequently. So look for our content out there.
That's awesome. And just so our listeners, it's interview, I-N-N-E-R, interview. Not, there's no T in there. Not that Chris or I said that, but if you're listening on headsets at the gym, I want you to go to the right place. Interview.com.
That's correct. We help marketers take an inner view of their marketing strategy and look at their own people as a critical audience.
That's awesome. Chris, thanks a lot for a great interview. Really appreciate it.
Jim, thank you. Good luck with your sailing.
Thanks, man. Hey, folks, that wraps up this very special interview with Christopher Wallace. He is the co-founder of Interview. And boy, there's a lot. I listened to this episode again. Rewind, hit the backspace, whatever you're going to do. A lot of good information in here for serious marketers. Connect with me at my free Facebook, which is Build Your Dream Business Now. My main website is getjimpalmer.com. I think that's enough promo. Until this time next week, another fantastic interview right here from our floating home. I'm Captain Jim Palmer, the Dream Business Coach. You take good care.
Now it's time to go implement what you've learned. Great ideas are nice, but results only happen through action and implementation. So stay focused. Kick all distractions to the curb.
Sleep a little less if you have to.
And create your dream business now so you too can live your dream lifestyle. To learn about building your dream business, join Jim's free Dream Business Facebook community at dreambizgroup.com. That's dreambizgroup.com. See you next week for more Dream Business Radio.